And welcome in, everyone, the Monday edition of Robbie and Rexrode. I am Joe Rexrode, and that is Adam Vingan across from me, in for Robbie all week here on 102.5 and 106.3 The Game. Adam Vingan, you are about to spend so much time with me this week. I was just thinking about this. When's the last time you spent this much time with me over a few days period?
Playoff series.
Yeah, like this might be like Stanley Cup Final 2017 run type fatigue, Rexrode fatigue for you by Friday, perhaps.
A lot of flights that we took together, a lot of press boxes, a lot of pubs and restaurants and things of that nature.
A flight to California in which we
barely knew each other.
Well, no. Well, that's going the year before.
Yes.
But a flight to California in which we were feverishly writing about Ryan Johansson having, like, compartment syndrome.
Yes.
Right? Remember that one?
Yes. I recall specifically that we were connecting through Denver to get to California, and I think the news broke as we were waiting to board our Southwest flight from Denver to California.
Good memory.
Yes.
Yes, that's right. It was Denver. Oh, my goodness. Michelle Knezovic.
Hey, guys.
Intern Hanley. How's everybody today?
We're living the dream back here.
Yeah. Are you, like, so nervous that, like, there's just 5 days of me on mic one?
I do get a little stressed. Not going to lie. I do get a little stressed. Oh. But I have all the faith in the world in you, Rexrode.
Yeah. How long have you been doing the show with Robbie now?
It's just not smooth when I'm on mic one, man. Let's see. I suppose we first started this, like, maybe, like, the end of January 2020,
yeah,
kind of, temporary,
right?
And then
full time.
Then there was COVID, there was time off and all that, but yeah, I guess, well, see, officially the show was fall of last year, right? My gosh, I should know.
Yes,
so
you guys
things.
Started in the fall, and then I joined the show in July. So I joined about 6 months, 7 months after.
My point is that you've been doing this long enough with Robbie that hopefully some of his Mic One skills have rubbed off on you.
You would hope
via osmosis or something.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I think it'll be okay. It used to be pretty rough. Yeah, so we're coming up on our 2 year anniversary of the whole show, like the official show, right? Yeah, okay. I was like, we're coming up on a year anniversary now.
I hope you remember your actual anniversary better than you remember your
20 is coming up next month.
20 years.
That lucky young woman.
What anniversary is that? Like, they have different anniversaries, right?
I don't think is 20 a thing. 25 is a big one. 25 is like
for what?
Wedding anniversary.
I'm not married.
Well, you still know stuff. You're a professor. In what, 2 weeks from today, you're Professor Knezovic?
Professor Knez.
Professor Knez at Middle Tennessee. I would expect a college professor to know, just random things like what's the 25th anniversary.
The modern theme, according to this random website I'm on, says it's the platinum anniversary, the 20th anniversary.
20th is platinum?
Yes.
Oh my gosh.
25th is silver.
Does that seem weird? Isn't platinum like more valuable than silver?
I guess. When you sell a million records, you get a platinum album.
Right, like gold, like a gold record's 500K.
Right.
A platinum album is a million.
Yeah.
And the gold anniversary is 50, right?
I think so. Well, but okay. I've only been married for almost 3 years.
Yeah, and we got Arlo's first birthday coming
yes.
up here.
Yes, August 26th. My son will be one.
Which,
crazy.
By the way, like, I'd love to celebrate, except that I'll be moving my oldest into freaking college. So this show has taken a dark, depressing turn.
Mm.
Hit us up, by the way, on the text line, phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025.
See, you did that well.
Thank you.
See,
it's
solid.
Smooth. Mike won. In control. Also, you can watch us stream live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook Live every day, and our video stream is brought to you by the Law Office of Amanda Gentry. You got any, what else you got? I got more for you if you want it. I've got a whole stack of papers here that Michelle printed out for me on very nice paper. But we're going to get into, we're going to talk hockey. I mean, I want to talk hockey every day with you this week.
Okay.
I know it's football season. I know that it is, it's camp and it's mostly football, but I think we need to carve out time to talk hockey, a lot of Preds, kind of review where we are. We got some news, actually on the Preds front, a few days ago that we can review too. So we will get to that 6:30 every day. Right now though, I'm going to pick up my trusty notebook. Look at this. I mean, just look at the writing on this.
That's very John Glennon of you with your yellow legal pad full of chicken scratch.
Yes, and that's exactly what it is. It is a big it's a big notebook of chicken scratch. So I'm going to go through notes. What I want to do is I don't write down too much stuff, okay? But I like to kind of go through the notes here, hit some big moments, and then I'm going to see if you come up with themes out of my notes.
Okay.
Okay. So, all right. So, we're going to, because I got two practices, very eventful Titans practices since we last aired.
Friday and Sunday.
Friday, of course, after the show, and then yesterday, Saturday was a day off. Yesterday was the most physical practice by far of training camp for the Tennessee Titans. They actually lined up and did goal line, you know, full pads, offense, defense, 11-on-11 goal line running plays. And you just, I mean, it brought me back because you just used to see this all the time in training camps or college or pro. And you just do not see a lot of smashing like that on running plays, you know, but you got to rep it some. I mean, you've got to practice these things some. So it was a very interesting practice. But let's go to Friday. Some notes. First of all, Dylan Cole limped in. He seems to be okay. It looked kind of rough at first. Dylan Cole, you know, reserve linebacker, but they need their depth there. You know, Woods, one of the guys who was off Friday. You know, Friday was a big, Nicholas Petit-Frere is getting a real chance to compete with Dylan Radins at right tackle. I've got Caleb Farley with a great breakup on a pass to Racy McMath. There's a lot of passes toward Racy McMath these days. Kyle Phillips so here's another guy who's making me notice. Shakur Brown, Michigan State, recent signing.
Now you notice him right off the bat.
Yeah, well, I'll be honest. Like, when the Titans signed him, you know, he was a fine college player.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have watched him and said, oh, yeah, that's a pro. And he's a little bit smallish. But I tell you what, he is out there making the most of his opportunity right now. I've got Woodside with a dime to Josh Malone for a TD. This is 7-on-7, by the way. A bomb to Racy beats Christian Fulton. Now, my chicken scratch is a little bit rough.
This is why I don't handwrite anything anymore.
Yeah. There's another Racy. So he beat Fulton. Looks like there was a PBU in there, and I can't tell who it was. Okay, but a blown coverage, Racy with a touchdown.
So is Racy McMath the new Chester Rogers, the wide receiver that steps up in training camp and grabs everybody's attention?
See, it's a good question. I think it's different because, you know, Chester Rogers was a kind of a journeyman who'd been around the league, right? Mm-hmm. Same with Marcus Johnson. Both those guys were terrific in camp all last year. Julio Jones missed almost all of it. A.J. Brown missed a chunk of it.
Yeah.
So they were like, okay, they're good. They're good players. You kind of knew they could play to some extent. They looked very good. The difference with Racy McMath is he's a second year, of course, draftee who has always had kind of an impossible combination of size and speed. And the guy's like, I'll get the official dimensions here.
So
in a
is
second.
It more accurate to say he's this year's Nick Westbrook-Akina?
That's probably a better way to put it. He is he has come a long way. He has improved a ton. And honestly, I put him on the 53 going into camp just because of special teams. That's a big part of why they drafted him.
Racy McMath is listed at 6'3", 217 pounds.
Yeah, and so I would say last year he was closer to 230. He's definitely
slimmed down.
I don't think there's any doubt about that. He looks really fast, but he just looks just a lot better as a receiver. Last year as a technician, he was, yeah, I mean, he was raw. And you just don't know. You don't know how someone's going to develop. He may be the guy now who can actually take the top off the defense every once in a while. He may be the guy who can actually vertically stretch defenses. And I wasn't sure the Titans had that guy.
Yeah, it's been a minute, right, since they've had someone like that. I mean, A.J. Brown could do that.
He could, yes. A.J. Brown could do everything.
But they didn't have the, you know, who's the first person? Like Will Fuller. You know, Will Fuller, I know he's always injured, but he's right. That guy that I often think about football from a fantasy perspective, just because I'm a pretty big fantasy football guy.
Yep.
And Will Fuller was always that guy that, you know, he would have two catches, but one of them would be a 67-yard touchdown. You know, so yes. he could take so the top off the defense.
He'd have three catches for 90 yards, and one of them was a 65-yarder. Right.
Right. Yeah. So it's been a while since the Titans, I feel like, have had someone who is a pure downfield long ball threat.
No. Khalif Raymond kind of filled that role for them. He had good speed. You know, they've tried different people in that role, but no, they really have not had that guy. And again, I'm not saying Racy McMath is going to be a breakout star this year, but I think watching him out there, I can see how he can get into the rotation and have some of those opportunities and actually really put stress on some safeties. All right, so we have not gotten through a lot of my chicken scratch, but good conversation. We're going to take a break, and we'll be back and get more into Friday and then, of course, yesterday's very physical practice with the Tennessee Titans here on Robbie and Rex ODA. 1025, 1063, The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road. Adam Vinken in for Robbie.
Where is Robbie?
Robbie's he's at the beach. He's at the beach in Florida. So I would say going to Florida in August, you're asking to be cooking. Although, can you really be cooking more than you're cooking here anyway?
No, it's awful here.
But you're on the beach.
I just got back from a week-plus trip. For my first real family vacation with my son. And we started in Jekyll Island, Georgia, which is an hour north of Jacksonville. And then we went to Kiawah Island, South Carolina, which is outside of Charleston. So,
yeah, I've heard many good things about that place.
It was hot. So I have to imagine Robbie is cooking. But Robbie loves that weather. He loves that incredibly hot, humid weather. I never understand it. But
I'm basically with him, yes.
You like that?
Oh, yeah.
I hate it.
As you get older, to me, the cold is just less and less tolerable, and I'll melt. I'll melt way more happily.
Well, it's the humidity that bothers me. I mean, if it's hot and not humid, it's a dry heat, quote unquote. That's fine, but it's the humidity which makes you feel like you're stepping into a sauna every time you walk out the door.
Yes.
Can't handle it.
I hear you. Speaking of melting, Ty on the text line, driven by WilsonCountyHunter.com, says, ask for a weight loss update. Thank you, Ty. Thank you for asking. I lost 11 pounds last week.
11 pounds?
11 pounds. Now,
how did you do that?
Well, but here's the thing. There's 20 that are begging to get off the island, okay? So, like, I knew that this would be, like, initially from 255, like, I'm already, like at 235, then it's like, okay.
Now you plateau at some point.
Yeah.
As someone who has lost weight before.
So, essentially, I just had a good week of exercise just about every day. Some days I was very, very disciplined. Some days not as much. So it probably could have been better than that. But I knew the first 20 was going to be fast. It will, you know, we'll see how it goes.
Do we have a sponsorship for that? Joe's Weight Loss Journey, sponsored by...
Stay tuned, Adam. Stay tuned.
Jenny Craig. Noom.
Don't throw it. No free ads.
Oh, no free ads. No shouts. Yes, no free shouts.
Right. No free shouts. Yeah, stay tuned on that. All right, let me rip through these notes. I take too many notes. I said I don't take too many notes. I take too many notes. But Friday, we're still on Friday, okay? You had a great pass from Tannehill. Burks actually dropped. I think this is the first Burks drop that I've seen of camp. But right after that, a deep crosser from Tannehill to NWI that was just probably as good a throw and catch as we've seen in camp. Farley in the coverage. Farley got picked on a lot Friday. He made some plays. He gave up some plays.
How does that make you feel?
He is getting some good work.
How does that make you feel? Because I remember you and Jared had a pretty spirited discussion, as is customary whenever the two of you have a conversation about storylines in training camp. And you had Farley pretty high, if I recall correctly.
Well, yeah, of course he is.
And Jared's had him like fifth or sixth or something like that.
Well, yeah.
So, you know, when you watched Caleb Farley that day, based on your notes, I mean, how are you feeling about Caleb Farley? I mean, he hasn't really played a significant amount of competitive football in a couple of years, right? So, you know, do you feel like what you're seeing in camp is expected for someone who has to shake off a little rust, or are you maybe a little concerned about what you've seen?
No, I think it's been absolutely a massively positive story for the Titans.
There you go.
To me, he moves differently than he moved last year before the ACL. Like, he looks a lot more fluid. I've said this, but he looks a lot more fluid to me. He's moving extremely well. The length and he is stronger for sure. I mean, he's given up some plays, there's no doubt. But he's also making a lot. He looks to me like a starting corner in the NFL. We'll see if he, you know, does he get any work against the Ravens? Is he getting work in these preseason games? He's going to get great work against the Bucs and Cardinals in practice for sure. Overall, yeah, he's one of the top stories. I mean, to me, the training camp stories are unknown commodities who are going to be relied on or need to be relied on are the big stories of a camp, right? Like, to me, like, the Henrys and Tannehills are bigger stories as we move
right
into the season.
Because you know who they are, and, you know, with Ryan Tannehill, for example, because I know that everybody out there has been doing it, but I know that Jared has been very, you know, specifically tracking Tannehill's, you know, performance at camp, and he just threw his first interception.
And I'll fast forward to yesterday. He threw another one yesterday.
Okay, so now he has two.
We've downgraded from MVP to All Pro to now he's just a Pro Bowler this year.
Okay,
but if he gets to like a third or fourth pick, you know, who knows?
I mean, how much do you? I mean, that's why I find personally, as someone who hasn't covered the NFL as closely, you know, as a reporter as you have, the breathless reporting from practice I always find so interesting about who's lining up where, who's catching the most passes, who what the quarterbacks are doing. I find it very interesting.
Yeah.
Because in the world that I was reared in hockey, practice really isn't, you know, who's playing with who, and that's about it. Like, you know, but I do find that very interesting. But it's, you know, back to Caleb Farley.
Well, I agree with you.
So with, you know, with those joint practices coming up, you know, when the other team's offenses are going up against the Titans defense, which receivers is Caleb Farley being matched up against, you think?
Well, I think if things go well, and, you know, Christian Fulton is a guy who, again, he has given up some plays in camp. I mean, you could look at Christian Fulton and say, yeah, you'd like him to not be giving up as many plays as he's given up. Now, he's had his moments as well. I mean, both those guys are getting a ton of work. I do feel like the Titans, I feel like this offense is pushing things vertically more than they have. And again, Racy McMath is often part of that, but you'll see it with Burks, you'll see it with Westbrook-Akina, you'll see it with Wood. You know, I mean, they're mixing around.
Well, let's think about those teams' wide receivers, the teams that they're practicing. So they're practicing against the Buccaneers and the Cardinals, right?
Yeah.
So the Cardinals, you've got, is DeAndre Hopkins going to be able to practice? I know he's suspended for the start of the season. Is he going to be able to practice? I'm sure he's be able to practice,
I think,
right?
I think he's taking part in that. So that's the type of guy you match a Farley up with.
Okay.
Mike Evans is the type of guy you match a Farley up with.
Okay.
So that's the thing. That if it works out as hoped, then you've got the bigger, more physical corner for Farley. But again, I mean, he's fast too. I mean, he's got all the tools. He's got all the traits. But I think the bigger, stronger receivers would go to him. Fulton, a little bit more of the, you know, the speed guys,
the
so
Marquise
to speak.
Browns and the,
yeah. Now, yeah. You know, how often are the Titans actually matching up? I mean, in certain situations, you have to.
Right.
They play a ton of zone. You know, they play a lot of cover three and different things. But yeah, that's, I think that's how it would work out when you are matching up.
Okay.
So, and it's a good situation. Speaking of which, Phillips on a deep out beat Farley Friday on a play. So Kyle Phillips showing up a little bit more.
I've heard his name a lot.
Lately, he has come on absolutely more. A big thing that happened again Friday, Nicholas Petit-Frere We are going to actually hear a pretty good interview from yesterday later in the show with Petit Frere, who, of course, Taylor Lewan called an intellectual and said he's like Rain Man. I'll spoiler alert on the interview. He has not seen that movie.
I'm sure Michelle hasn't seen it.
Yeah, I haven't either.
It's a great movie. Yes. I'm not surprised. So Petit Frere, pass rush reps. So this kind of tells you about, you know, the opportunities he's getting here against Harold Landry. And the big thing with Petit Frere has been, you know, he's got to get better with his hands. That was kind of the scouting report coming in. Everybody's talked about it. He had a pass pro punch against Landry that absolutely stunned him. That was, I was like, that is picture perfect. And again, against an accomplished, very good pass rusher in the NFL. He had another one against DeMarcus Walker. This was kind of like a combo block. It was like a play action pass protection. I mean, the physicality, the hit he put on DeMarcus Walker, you're just like, whoa. There's just a big difference in kind of like physicality, I would say, between Petit Frere and Dylan Raidens. Not to say that Petit Frere is going to win the job or is a better option than Raidens, but when he can square someone up, it's like, whoa. You notice it. So that was a big thing about Friday.
Yeah, the Titans offensive line, I mean, that seems to me like the biggest question mark entering the season, right?
It's, to me, not even close. I would have called it, did call it, close with the receivers going into camp. And this is to your point about breathless reporting on these things.
Yeah.
You got to be careful. You can't make too much of it. But let's go back to last camp. You mentioned Chester Rogers. Well, he started a lot of the year and played all year. I mean, he was a big part. Marcus Johnson, a total lost opportunity for him and the Titans last year but that's the problem with Marcus Johnson. He can't stay healthy.
Right.
He was going to help them a lot. So,
and Josh, don't forget Josh Reynolds. He didn't have a great camp.
Well,
either, did he?
And then you have him who was coming off. I guess he had an Achilles injury to some extent, wasn't very good, but he looks pretty good with the Lions. But yeah, I mean, it didn't
work out. Who wouldn't look good with the Lions?
Well,
isn't Khalif Raymond on the Lions now?
Oh,
too?
Sure. They like to take former Titans.
Dan Campbell,
up there.
Baby.
Just get some
biting those kneecaps.
Yeah, pep talks from him.
Are you excited for Hard Knocks with the Lions?
I actually am. That's this week, right?
I think so.
Yeah. No, I'm Hard Knocks has kind of fallen off.
It certainly has.
These teams have kind of figured out, like, we don't want anything embarrassing. So there's just a lot less interesting stuff and access.
You have to go back to, like, the first five or so years of Hard Knocks when...
Like, when Vrabel was on Hard Knocks in Houston, that was a good one.
That was a good season,
he kind of stole the season.
Yeah, that was a good season. Because that was also the time they had the fight with the Washington football team.
That's right.
So that was good too.
I think the Jets Rex Ryan one was.
Let's go
amazing.
Get a snack.
Campo with the Cowboys was. That was quite an episode. But yeah, I'm hopeful. I'm hopeful Dan Campbell can save the show. All right. Well, I didn't even get to Sunday notes.
We have 3.5 hours to go.
We do.
So we'll have time.
We will. Yeah, we will later return to Sunday. For now, we're going to get into the Preds and some news on the Preds and some reaction from Adam Vingan on Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. You can watch us streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, Facebook Live every day. Video streaming brought to you by the law offices of Amanda Gentry. This is Robbie and Rex Road on 102.5, 106.3, The Game and The Game in Asheville app. Joe Rex Road, Adam Vingan in for Robbie. And we are going to talk a little Preds, Adam.
Okay.
And get into some arbitration that was, I don't know. I have not seen this. You tell me if you've seen this. An arbitrator being like, hey, I need another day on this. And it's not like this was some huge, contentious, big-ticket salary arbitration. I mean, it was basically $1 million difference between the team and the player. So, first of all, that part of it your thoughts and also the outcome, which is 2 years at
1.7 per season.
1.7 per. 2 years, 3.4.
My first thought is that I feel like, and I would have to go look this up, but it feels like the Predators actually go to arbitration more than a lot of teams. I mean, off the top of my head, you know, Trennan, of course, is the player we're referring to. Went to arbitration, like actually went through a hearing. Rocco Grimaldi went through a hearing 3 years ago, I believe it was. Craig Smith went through a hearing, you know, 6 or 7 years ago. Famously, Shea Weber went through a hearing. You know, it feels like the Predators end up going to arbitration because a lot of times, ultimately, you know, the arbitration date serves as a deadline for teams to get deals done. I believe Trennan is the only NHL player who filed for arbitration who's actually gone to arbitration so far this summer. And arbitration hearings are not pleasant experiences because basically what happens is, you know, the team is going to argue that the player deserves less money than he wants. Because as you saw, typically the team ask is lower and the player ask is higher. And they usually end up meeting in the middle. But I remember talking to Rocco Grimaldi after his arbitration hearing and, you know, him being prepared by his team that, you know, you're not going to like what you hear in there, most likely. And if I recall correctly, Rocco said that the Predators, either before or after, I can't recall, it would make a difference either way. But it, you know, basically said, you know, hey, you know, we value you as a player. This is nothing personal. It's, you know, basically it's just business. But, you know, they're not pleasant hearings because whatever happened in that hearing, you know, the Predators were arguing that Yakov Trennan was not as valuable money-wise as he thought he was. And, you know, I think $1.7 million is fair value for Trennan. I had always estimated that it would come around $2 million, so not far off. You know, I think it's a fair deal for the player. I think Trennan took a big step this past season, you know, was an identity player for the team, made a lot of big plays, you know, scored multiple goals in the playoffs, was really one of the few bright spots in that first round playoff series against the Avalanche. He's tough as nails. I mean, there aren't many players who have fought Zdeno Chara twice in their careers, and he's done it twice. And, you know, I think Trennan is a good player for this team in terms of their identity. So I think it's a fair deal, ultimately, but I can't imagine it was a fun experience for either side because, like I said, it's about arguing someone's value right in front of them.
Yeah, now, with Arvidsson, I believe...
So they got
the deal done.
You're right. Yeah, before? I forgot about Victor Arvidsson. So,
or in the middle of it, they finally came to the agreement. So before the arbitrator ruled. Right?
So previously, when teams went to arbitration, teams could still negotiate a contract until the point where the arbitrator ruled. So I think in the case of Arvidsson, I'm glad you remembered that. In the case of Arvidsson, I believe they went through the hearing, but they came to an agreement on his 7-year contract before the judge ruled. And that used to be allowed. That's no longer allowed under the new CBA. Under the new CBA, once it gets to arbitration, once the hearing starts, there's no further negotiations.
The arbitrator has to
correct.
Has to determine it.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So in Arvidsson's case, they did the hearing, and then in that period of time between the end of the hearing and when the judge had to send down the ruling, they figured it out. And that used to be allowed. That's not allowed anymore. Once the hearing starts, whatever the arbitrator decides is what the decision is. There's no further negotiating on the side.
So going to these things as frequently as David Poile does, I mean, I guess the explanation would just be ultimately – You save a few bucks on average, right? I mean, is it basically like you feel confident that at least meeting the middle, is easier to achieve by going through this? Because, like you said, it's painful, right? I mean, it can't be. I'm sure it's not pleasant on the Pred side either,
right? Because You know, they, you know, Trennan is a Predators draft pick, and he's been in the organization now for several years, and he's been a valuable player to them in Milwaukee, and he's come up to Nashville and been a good player for them as well. And I they have to go in there and they have to, you know, they have to basically argue. For example, so I have the arbitration filing. This is courtesy of our friend Elliot Freeman. So the team asked for a 2-year deal with a $1.35 million cap hit. Trennan asked for a $2.4 million contract 1 year.
Yeah.
So, you know, basically right in the middle. It was more towards the Predators, actually, than it was for Trennan, because...
And they got the 2 years, which to me is, I mean, you want him for the next 2 years.
Right.
For sure.
And I believe he is still an RFA when that... No, I don't think that's right. I'll have to look that up, whether he...
Yeah, why wouldn't he be a UFA?
Yeah, I think this walks him up to unrestricted free agency. I'd have to check cap friendly for that. But yeah, it's... I think it's interesting to me that, I mean, I would have to go look at the database and decide, you know, who and determine, you know, who's gone to arbitration the most over the past, you know, several years. But since I've been here, they've gone to arbitration a lot. I had forgotten about Arvidsson. You're correct. He's a UFA when it expires. Arvidsson, Grimaldi, Smith, now Trennan. I may even be forgetting somebody else, but that's a lot. That's a lot. A lot of teams never see the inside of a proverbial courtroom because they just get it done.
Yeah.
So I think that's interesting.
Well, and the Arvidsson part is interesting, especially because it's like, okay, so which side was like, I mean, like if you go through that, I guess like which side was like, let's just not even hear the rule. Like I guess if you go through the trouble of doing it and the hard part of it, why wouldn't you just let the arbitrator rule? You know what I mean?
Yes.
But that was a while ago. Now Trennan is locked in. I really like him a lot as a player. I think you laid it out there. He's just a solid all-around player, very tough. He makes things happen. Yeah, he was one of the – you know, you always think back to the series against the Stars in 2019, the best forward for the Preds was Rocco Grimaldi.
Yes.
Okay. Like, and there were some other guys who played well, on the defensive side, and Pecorine was incredible in that last game. But Trennan, how many people really stood out in that Colorado series as playing well for the Preds? I mean, Trennan was one of the very few. So my question to you. On him is this. Do you think it's important that the Preds next year keep that line together? Because it certainly could. You could certainly make a case that like a Tanner Jeannot could potentially move up. You don't know exactly. I mean, obviously, I think they've fortified the top six with Nito Niederreiter, but how important do you think it is that that line, whatever you want to call it, however you want to characterize it, stays together as a line?
I mean, I do think it is important. And by the way, I just looked this up. So the arbitration filings for Arvidsson back in 2017, according to Elliot Freeman, Arvidsson was asking for a 1-year, $4.5 million deal. The Predators were looking for a 2-year, $5.5 million deal. So $2.75 million each year. Ended up being, I think, $4.25 million. So... Arvidsson got more of what he wanted ultimately in the contract.
But and how many years did that?
Seven. It was a 7-year, seven-year contract with a $4.25 million cap hit, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah. So somewhere in there, David Poile was just like, "Let's just blow it out, man." Right.
Well, that was always, something that, that was always something that was interesting to me. It's just this idea of we've said all the things we need to say that are mean to each other, so let's just knock it out now. But David Poile has always liked signing his younger players to those long-term deals. He did it with Josi, he did it with Arvidsson, I think he did it with Ryan Ellis, Matthias Ekholm. He likes signing those like long-term deals coming off of entry-level deals or RFA deals.
But if he would have offered that deal to Arvidsson from the start, they never would have had to go in there, right?
Yeah, I mean, probably, but So let's see. So I'm, you know, Michelle texted us and said that Craig Smith never went to arbitration. He avoided arbitration. I feel like he went through the hearing, though. I'll have to look that up during the break, but you know, either way.
And we'll go to the break, and when we come back, we'll get the answer on that and also more on the Preds lineup, that line, how things all fit into the big picture here on Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Welcome back, Robbie and Rex Road, live from the Hillside Medical Game Studio, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Joe Rex Road, Adam Vingan in for Robbie Stanley. And we're talking Preds, talking Yakov Trenin. We got to shout down a caller. Wait, what? Warren? Warren called. Appreciate the call. But as we have looked up, Craig Smith's result actually was post-hearing.
According to Cap Friendly, it was the contract was signed post-hearing, but before the verdict was reached.
So just like Arvidsson.
Yes. So, Warren, I appreciate the call. You come at the king, you best not miss. That's all I'm saying. I remember that. I remember talking to Craig about it.
Now, Warren, he had a story about, like walking on the side. I mean, that could be true.
That could be true.
Yeah.
It could have been after the hearing.
But they did have the hearing.
It could have been something to the effect of, you know, Craig was leaving the hearing and he gets a call like, hey, come back. We're gonna settle this contract. And I think it was a five-year deal, if I recall correctly.
Good old Craig Smith.
Crazy legs.
Yes, that's right. So, Trenin, he's in.
He's
the
in.
The lineup appears to be set
yes.
for next season. So, again, that line, do you? Because I remember different situation. Like Colton Sisson's always involved in these conversations. But the Sisson's-Bonino-Watson line, if you remember
yes.
how good that was. In
yes.
particular, against McKinnon and the fellas, as
yeah.
young guns in 2018,
they were great against that line in the playoffs that year.
And they were, you know, they were creating offense. You know, not just not only were they matched up, you know, as a shutdown line,
yeah.
so to speak, but they were really making trouble for them and creating offense too.
Yes,
that was a brief spurt. We've seen this line, the Herd line. I like the Herd line personally. Kara Hammer, shout out. I know that like Hal Gale likes to say Beast line. To me, that's like sort of like the Beast line is like the Bush to the Herd line's Pearl Jam. Okay, you know, it's like you had these kind of crappy bands that followed the really good bands.
My theory, as some listeners may know, is that Joe hates all one word named post grunge bands. You don't like Bush. You don't like Live. You don't like
Creed.
Creed was Creed post grunge? I guess so.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, I guess they are. You don't like, you know. I'm sure I'll think of some other ones, but
well, and like Nickelback and all that stuff. I mean,
that technically is one word. Yeah.
Yeah.
So
bad bands in there.
But anyway. But
so,
yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, it's the Herd line.
Yes.
And or you know, John Hines likes to say Identity line.
Yes.
But in my opinion, that. Even if you're struggling with the top six next year, you need to mix things up. Tanner Jeannot takes another step, and he's really even more of an offensive threat. I just feel like that line should be almost cemented next season as a line. Am I overreacting?
No. I mean, I think in terms of total time on ice, they were like third or fourth in the league in terms of like the actual amount of time those three spent on the ice together. And the lines in front of them were like, if I recall
Star
correctly,
lines.
Were some really good lines. Like the, you know, pour one out for the Johnny Gaudreau, Elias Lindholm, Matthew Tkachuk line in Calgary. But they were up there. I also believe the Jason Robertson, Rope Hintz, Joe Pavelski line in Dallas. I think that was up there too. They were, as John Hines likes to say, the identity line. And I think, you know, I don't. You know, I haven't, you know, I was, you know, last time I sat in here with Robbie was, you know, the week of free agency, you know, I saw the, you know, that was before Nino Niederreiter signed. And, you know, I saw the deal. I thought it was a great deal for the Predators. You know, I think Nito Niederreiter, you know, is probably worth more than $4 million a season. But I think to get him on that cap hit at only 2 years, I think with some savvy business by the Predators, and he'll help a lot. I mean, he's a good player. He'll fit right in on a second line. You know, he does all of the things that John Hines values. You know, he forechecks his butt off. He gets in front of the net. He's defensively responsible. You know, he can, you know, he's usually good for, you know, 15 to 20 goals. You know, so I think that was a really good move all around by the Predators. And with his addition up there, you know, with his addition in the top six, you know, you might not have to touch that Sissons line with Trennan and Jeannot. You know, the question is, and this is the question.
So there's one more spot.
Yeah.
It's still a question.
In the top six.
Right.
I mean, I think we all assume that Philip Tomasino will get a crack there. And yes. I think that makes a lot of sense. You know, because quite frankly, I don't want to say I'm done with Elli Tolvanen, because that's strong. But I don't think that Elli Tolvanen is consistent enough as a top six player to be that everyday top six player. I think, especially because you have a quote unquote third line like the Sissons line. You know, fourth lines traditionally are where you put your, you know, your big guys, your quote unquote goons back in the day, and they only play 6 or 7 minutes a night. You know, fourth lines are a lot different in today's NHL. So if you had a fourth line, and I would assume that the fourth line would be some combination of Elli Tolvanen, Zach Sanford, and Cody Glass. I mean, you know, that is a line that can, you know, generate offense, and you don't need them to be a shutdown line because you have, you know, you have, or a physical line because you have that in the Sissons line. So, you know, I think that Tomasino makes the most sense to get a crack at the top six. You know, he's young. I thought he played well last year, especially considering his line mates. I mean, I think a lot of the, you know, he's playing a lot with players like Nick Cousins and Michael McCarron, and with all due respect to those players, you know, they're not as skilled as Philip Tomasino is, and he still had a pretty solid rookie season for a 20-year-old. So, you know, I think if you put him on the line with presumably Nino Niederreiter and Ryan Johansson, I think that, you know, the Predators, you know, have a line that could work. It's, you know, when was the last time, I mean, like, I was going to say, when was the last time the Predators had a consistent second line? Well, I mean, the Kevin Fiala, Kyle Turris, Craig Smith line was great in the regular season, and then they disappeared in the playoffs.
Yes.
But, you know, that second line has been, you know, has been a thorn in the Predators' side for, you know, a few years. I mean, they've tried a lot of players up there, and they've had some consistency in the regular season, but I feel like in the postseason especially, you know, that line, whoever is on it, tends to disappear. So I'm intrigued by the potential of a Niederreiter, Johansson, Tomasino line, and I guess we'll see here fairly soon what it could look like.
I do wonder that, I mean, just there is the history with Granlund. Could it be that Johansson gets a little bit of an opportunity with the big two up there too?
Yeah,
and you switch it down.
Yeah, that's true as well. You know, I'd have to look and see how often the two of them play together. And Granlund started, if I recall correctly, Granlund started as a center in Minnesota and then went to wing. And then, you know, when he came here, he was a winger mostly, and then he transitioned to center. But there is familiarity there with their time from the Wild. And, you know, that could be something they could do. But, you know, quite frankly, you know, I thought Forsberg, Granlund, and Duchesne have had really good chemistry for a couple of years now. So I wouldn't touch that line. For me, the most important thing for the Predators this offseason was finding at least one, you know, actual top six winger to play with Ryan Johansson.
And they did.
You know, Ryan Johansson had a good season last season. It didn't get talked about a lot because of what was going on with Philip Forsberg and Matt Duchesne and Roman Josi. But he had 20, I think he had 26 goals last season and close to 70 points. If he didn't reach 70 points, I don't remember off the top of my head. But you know, he did it while being saddled with Elli Tolvanen and Luke Cunningham, which makes it even more impressive in my opinion. So I think, you know, The question we'll have to ask ourselves, and we've been asking ourselves for, you know, a while now, is are they better today than they were at the end of the season? Yes, they are better today than they were at the end of the season. Are they that much better that we feel good about their chances of legitimately contending? I'm still, you know, not sold on that.
And it was 26-63, by the way, for Johansson. So I agree. Okay. It was kind of lost in the achievements of the others, but it was quite a response season for him too. All right, we come back. We're going to switch gears, talk some Vols with Mike Wilson of the Knoxville News Sentinel here on Robbie and Rex Show. 102.5, 106.3, The Game.